The Civil War is an endlessly fascinating topic for me. Maybe it is for you, too. I think it's especially exciting when we find new first-person accounts of the war. And lucky for us, the letters that a Wisconsin Union soldier, Guy Taylor, wrote back to his wife, Sarah, fell into some very knowledgeable and very capable hands. Those hands belong to Kevin and Patsy Anderson. They live in Lafarge, Wisconsin, and by golly, they live within 15 miles of Guy Taylor's former farmstead. Kevin taught American history for 33 years. Patsy's an artist. They're co-authors of some other books. Very popular Barns Without Corners, Round Barns of Vernon County, Wisconsin. Together, they operate Kickapoo Valley Heritage Art and Tours, and the 1890 Ottervale General Store. And they join us from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in La Crosse to talk about their book. It's titled Letters Home to Sarah, The Civil War Letters of Guy C. Taylor, 36th Wisconsin Volunteers. Kevin and Patsy, what a pleasure to have you with us today. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Larry. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you.
I'm really happy to have you here. And I finished the book, a few days ago. And I really enjoyed the book a lot. We'll get into this, but I really felt like I came to know quite a bit about Guy Taylor and the Taylor family, and really to respect the man. I expect the same thing happened to you. But before we get to that, I think a very interesting story is how you came upon these letters, and that's a great story in it of itself, Guy. And maybe you can talk about that a bit with us, Kevin.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Both Patsy and I really enjoy going to auctions. We had gone to auctions quite a few times before we went to one on that day in Cashin, Wisconsin. And we went there without any real intention of buying anything specifically. And as I was looking around, I went into the garage and found a cardboard box. It was filled with letters, or at least envelopes. And I looked at the envelopes, and I saw U.S. Sanitary Commission and U.S. Christian Commission on a couple of the letters. I knew, since I had taught history, that those were Civil War organizations, and came to the conclusion that they were probably Civil War letters. I did look at inside one that was opened and saw the date 1864. That kind of confirmed my suspicions. But then from that point on, we really kind of took a chance, because I didn't know how many there would be, what kind of condition they would be in, what the subject matter would be, and so on. But it really stimulated my interest, that's for sure.
Kevin and Patsy Alderson, our guests today, and you didn't have a lot of money at the time, and so it was even a kind of a, oh man, I don't know, are we going to be able to get this? For what you must have had somewhere around $100 as a top bidding.
It got to 95. You're right. We were kind of thinking about $100. I'm not sure if I would have stopped or not. I know the looks I was getting a little bit from Patsy kind of indicated that maybe I should, but I really sensed that they were something special, and I do have to admit I really wanted us to be able to buy those, partly so that we could keep them together. One of the people we're bidding against was a person that is into antiques, and certainly there's nothing wrong with that, but we feared that the collection could be split up and sold separately, and we really wanted to keep them together. I know that I did.
Oh, and what a shame if those letters had not been kept together. What do you think, Patsy? I think it would have been you obviously would agree
with
me on that.
You're right. Our limit was $100. I do most of the banking, so I know it's in our checking more so than he does.
and this is a few years back.
We had five children. Yeah, we had five children at that time, and they were all getting close to mostly in high school and getting on their way to going to college. So, yeah, we had kind of to watch our pennies there a little bit. But In all honesty, if they would have went for 105 or 110, I probably would have let them keep going.
Well, you've got the letters, and then they sat for quite a while because you had a lot of other things going on. And eventually, and of course, the letters had sat for over 100 years in the attic of the house, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and that's one of the factors, really, in us buying them is, I guess I would consider them to be orphaned letters, because as I mentioned in the book, we really would not make a practice of buying something that looked to be an heirloom of the family. And interestingly enough, no one from the family that we knew that were holding the sale were bidding on the letters. And that was because they had been left up in an attic, and families had moved in and moved out, and new families had moved in, and they just basically sat up there until someone finally cleaned out the crawl space and found them. And so that kind of opened the door to buying them, one less obstacle to look at. And we certainly do consider them to be a treasure, and we are just thrilled to have them.
And so, and now talk a bit about what you did when you finally decided, okay, we're going to put these letters into probably a book. You sat down and went through all the letters, did you not?
Yeah, this was probably a little bit too particular, but I was very sensitive about handling the letters. I was literally afraid, and maybe I shouldn't have been, about copying them using any kind of light or copy machines or so forth. And so I took a magnifying glass and went through every single letter and rewrote every single word in my hand so that I felt comfortable handling the copies then, so I didn't have to handle the originals any more than necessary. So that in itself took a long time. And as you mentioned earlier, I used to teach at Cashin High School up in Wisconsin, in Monroe County. And I coached basketball there, and so I was so busy I had no time to really get into them the way I thought. And then also, as I started opening the letters and the envelopes, it was just one after another after another after another, right around 165 or so, in fact. And so it really became a monumental task to put them into the order and put them into the condition that they needed to be for publication.
And what I liked a lot, you didn't fiddle with his writing and the style or his spelling, for example. You left it pretty much the way he wrote it.
Yeah, Kevin and I talked a lot about that, and we just thought it was very important to leave the spelling the way it was. If you read the book, you can tell that we did change a few words.
Yeah,
because
a few.
He used the word no, K-N-O-W, a lot, but he spelled it now. And when you read the book, you realize how much you use that word. So we thought it was important to put that K right there. So it did say, no. But I just thought it gave the letters a lot of character. Although we realized that a lot of the spelling, he really did spell things wrong. He used the wrong, like there was always spelled T-H-E-I-R.
Yeah.
No matter how we used it and where, W-H-E-I-R. So originally it wasn't spelled wrong, it was just used wrong.
Yeah, but frankly, I like the way it reads.
I'm glad that you do, because that was one of the difficulties, was to try to make them readable and at the same time not lose their authenticity. And even though it's kind of an old cliche, I know we use it in our editing notes to simply, when in doubt, sound it out. And that does work for people, because he literally spelled things the way they sounded. And maybe if everybody spelled the way that Guy Taylor does, it would be easier to learn spelling, perhaps. And then also the person that wrote our introduction, which maybe that'll be coming up later, Catherine Shively Meyer, who is a noted historian, she introduced also to us the fact that there wasn't nearly as much standardization to spelling back then as there is now. And so he may, in fact, have spelled words the way he had been taught to spell them.
Yeah. Kevin and Patsy Alderson, our guests today, and they have published a book titled Letters Home to Sarah, The Civil War Letters of Guy C. Taylor, 36th Wisconsin Volunteers. A fascinating book, and I'm certainly recommending it to you. You may have a question. How much do you know about the Wisconsin soldiers in the Civil War? Maybe you have some questions or comments about that. give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Beeler Show. We'd love to hear from you. You know, one of the things I liked about how you put the book together, Kevin and Patsy, was that you have a little sort of introduction to certain parts of the book, so what you might be considering chapters of the book. And then you also followed up with when he mentioned a particular name of someone. I was very impressed that you know, somebody from Sun Prairie is an example that in the notes you followed up with more information about that particular person.
The thing we really tried to do, and I really appreciate your comments and compliments about that, because that's one of the goals that we were trying to reach, is that the letters themselves are what we consider to be the treasure. But at the same time, with someone that may not be as familiar with the Civil War and so forth, it had certain kinds of gaps that it just helped to kind of fill in. And what we were trying to do is produce notes that made it easy for the reader to focus on the letters and at the same time fill in the gaps to provide the information necessary to give more meaning to the book. And one of the things we thought was important was to try to identify as many people as he mentioned, both in his roster and also in his company, and those people that were back at home. And we succeeded in finding many of them. We couldn't find them all, and of course, now that the book's done, we'll probably find a few more here and there.
Yeah.
But we really appreciate the fact that you like that part of it. And then the other part, we had an introduction written, and it was kind of like it was introduced the entire book, but by the time you got to some of the subject matter and when you read the letters, it was easy to have forgotten that portion of the introduction.
Yeah.
So what we thought, it would work better if we took a segment of letters and then introduced that segment and then went on to the next segment and used an introduction for each one. And so I don't know if you want to call that a preview of the chapter or what, but we kind of split up the traditional introduction into sections.
And that worked really well. I really enjoyed that part of it. It made the book eminently more readable for me, or more interesting for me. And it didn't get in the way of the letters. I mean, you really get into those, at least I did, you really get into those letters and their life as you read through. And all right, then we come to a new section. I'm thinking, well, this is good. It's good to have this sort of background before we get into the next batch.
And the thing that's so interesting about Guy is that although we were talking about his spelling and so forth, and that's kind of an adventure, he really was quite philosophical.
Yes.
And his use of colorful language and his ability to describe things, we felt were really outstanding. In fact, we think that's one of the things from our standpoint that really sets the letters apart from some that we've read. We've read some other really outstanding letters, but this guy was really, really good at being able to describe everything that he came into contact with. He talked about the food that they had, how they prepared it. He talked about his housing, talked about how they built it, fortifications, the march, battles. And it was like, I know we mentioned in the book too, it was like he was trying to literally paint a picture with his words so that Sarah at home could understand what he was seeing and going through.
And it was interesting, there were some revelations for me as I was reading it. For example, there's at one point he's talking about how they had to get up in the middle of the night and load up a bunch of wounded and get all the wounded out of the camp. And his comment was, we must be having an attack coming up pretty quick here because we're getting rid of we're making room for the new wounded who are going to come.
Well, another factor about Guy, which probably would come up along the line, is right off the bat he ran into problems with health. And so he had the measles while he was still at Camp Randall. And then right after that he ended up probably with pneumonia. It wasn't mentioned as such, but on the trip to Washington they were on a train and it was raining and he got tired and wet on top of the measles, so he probably developed pneumonia. Eventually he just was healthy enough to get to the front. And then he ended up with malaria, and after he had malaria, then he had, even before and after, heat stroke. And so he ended up eventually being taken into the hospital tent, in a sense, with a doctor as an assistant to the first doctor from Sun Prairie, Dr. Woodward. And because of that, he saw an awful lot of wounded and cared for a lot of wounded. And it was an interesting thing that, in a way, he didn't see as much combat as some of the soldiers did, but he saw, I think, probably more results of that combat than the typical soldier did.
And it was kind of great to have that sort of behind the scenes or behind the battlefront commentary, because he was pretty philosophical but a very good describer of action.
Yeah, in fact, I have a few excerpts that I marked to myself, because I really think that his words, I can't really reach the level of some of the words that he had. And if you would be interested, I could read a couple excerpts just from the book with how he described battles and so forth.
Tell you what, we'll take a quick break here, and then we'll come back and we'll do that. And then we've lots of people, Steve and Fred and Bill, stay with us there online. We'll get to you with your questions and comments here in just a minute. Kevin and Patsy Alderson, our guests today, they are co-authors of the book Letters Home to Sarah, The Civil War Letters of Guy C. Taylor, 36th Wisconsin Volunteers. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hi, this is That Is Your Host, Ben Merens. Hope you'll join me this Election Day afternoon beginning at 3. We'll start off with a look at the Electoral College and discuss why it exists. Then after 4, we'll talk about a top story from the day's news, why it matters, and why it matters to you. That's all At Issue later today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up in about 20 minutes or so, we're going to be turning our attention to Wisconsin's artisanal cheeses with my good friend J.D. Carpenter, who is executive director of Wisconsin Cheese Original. So looking forward to that. She might even have some cheese along. I'm not sure. We'll find out. But right now, we're visiting with Kevin and Patsy Alderson, who live in rural Lafarge and have put together this great book, Letters Home to Sarah, The Civil War Letters of Guy C. Taylor. And Kevin, you said you had a... Maybe give us a little reading before we go to Steve and then Fred and Bill, who are online waiting to talk, just to give people a flavor of Guy's writing.
Relatively early in his experience, from a letter on May 26th of 1864, currently he was in the hospital, but he was still seeing casualties that were coming from the Overland Campaign, probably the battles of Spotsylvania and Cold Harbor. He says, "You do not know nothing about the war in Wisconsin. If you could come here and see the men, it would make your blood run cold in your veins. In this little place, 2,500 men wounded in this hospital, some with one leg and some with one arm, some shot through the head in every place you can think of. There is 16 wounded in the tent that I am in, but this is nothing to what it was at Belle Plaine."
Oh. He's a very, very good writer, and he really draws you into it. I know Stephen LaCrosse has some letters as well that he wanted to bring up or talk about, so let's go to him for a minute. Steve, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Actually, I have two questions.
All right.
I have a relative, distant uncle, who there's about 65 letters of his in the Wisconsin State Historical Society. And have you ever thought about donating the originals to the State Historical Society? I've read his letters. They're very similar to Guy's. He was actually the company clerk in a company in the 25th Infantry in Milwaukee. And the only reason that he was made the company clerk was he's the only guy in the company that could read and write. And is Guy pretty typical of... in his unit? And those are really the two questions that I have.
So
answering each, first of all, as far as eventually where will the letters end up, that is a great question, of which we're giving it some thought, because eventually down the line they need to be in some place that are accessible to the public. And so I don't want to say where they will go. We haven't really determined exactly where they'll go. But as far as a place like the Historical Society, or in fact the Historical Society, that could happen. And then the second question, again, when you talked about was he typical, I think that's very much what you described with the person you were talking about that was a clerk. Because Guy was ill a lot, he came into contact with this Dr. Woodward. And I think he really must have impressed Dr. Woodward with his ability to anywhere from cook to clerk to write to follow instructions. He was a very bright guy. In fact, later on he becomes like the checkers champion who's defeating all the officers and defeating the doctors. And so he was no doubt a very bright, talented guy who was almost too valuable to discharge and at the same time was not healthy enough to get highly involved with the action. And so I think that your comment as far as falling into that niche of necessary but not necessarily a combatant is exactly right for Guy Taylor.
Hmm. Thanks, Steve. Mm-hmm. Yeah, appreciate the call. Fred in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Fred.
Hi. It's a great show. I just have two very quick where questions. One is, where did Guy Taylor grow up? I assume it was not Wisconsin. And then it might have been. Number two, the where of the places the letters were written. Now, you mentioned Camp Randall and you mentioned Washington, D.C. You mentioned the hospital and you mentioned a place called Belle Plaine. It would be interesting to hear where was the hospital, where is Belle Plaine, and, you know, what areas, maybe Virginia, did he see, okay, and the kind of geographic side of it. Thank you.
Okay, great questions. First of all, Guy and his family grew up in Vermont, and then they moved to the town of Bristol, which is just north of Sun Prairie. Part of it, in fact, I think is incorporated into Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, in 1855. And eventually then, when you get to 1864, a little bit later than some, he joined the service, I think partly out of patriotism and partly out of bounty money that was being paid at that point. And he was assigned, unlike most Wisconsin troops, to the Eastern Front. He ended up the 36th Wisconsin, went to the Army of the Potomac, and they were one of only about seven regiments or so that were out in the East, whereas almost everybody else was located in the West. He got in, his unit got in just in time to join the battle at Spotsylvania, which would have been in May of 1864. From there, they ran into some major problems at Cold Harbor. In fact, their colonel was killed in the battle on June 3rd, the charge at Cold Harbor. And then eventually ended up at Petersburg. Most of that time, Guy is involved in the hospital watching casualties from these folks come from the battles, but he doesn't join the regiment until they have, at that point, entered the siege of Petersburg. He then is located at Petersburg up until April 2nd when they broke the lines, the Union did, and then he's involved with the Lee's retreat, the chasing of Lee's army to Appomattox. He's present there at Appomattox, and then from that point on, it talks about their eventual journey home. Prior to when they were in the Grand March or the Grand Review that was done in Washington, D.C. in 1865.
So he saw a lot in that year.
It's an interesting thing because I have to admit when I first saw the letters, I'm almost embarrassed to say this, but everybody knows so much about the Iron Brigade and the 2nd, 6th, and 7th Wisconsin, of course, being so fundamental to that, that when I first read that he was in the 36th, I thought, oh, too bad he's not in the Iron Brigade. And then also when he was at Petersburg all that time, I thought, well, it's too bad he wasn't at Gettysburg. And the reality of it is the bloodiest year of the war was probably from 1864 to 1865.
Yep.
And I think it really is overlooked. Not that the battles previous to that aren't extremely important. Every battle that any of those folks were in and put their life on the line for the country was important. But I think the Petersburg, Siege of Petersburg and so forth is under appreciated in a sense and underreported in terms of what all happened during that period of time, especially the Overland Campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. I fully agree with that. Fred, thank you so much. Bill in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that my great-great-great-grandfather from Milwaukee volunteered with the 2nd Wisconsin Volunteers and was a captain and was at Appomattox for the surrender. And I have one letter from him from that experience where he said in the letter that he was standing with his company across from a regiment of Confederates, and the Confederate regiment was smaller than his company, and that there was one man standing across from him dressed in a butternut suit who was lanky and thin, looking famished, and holding a bullet-scarred staff. and with the one arm he had left, and was crying tears, but they were not unmanly tears. Hmm. I found that touching.
Yeah.
I think it's extremely touching. And, of course, the 2nd Wisconsin is one of the most famous of all the regiments in the Union Army, so you no doubt can be very proud of your heritage there. And just from the book, it reminds me of from Guy's letter, he mentions about rebel soldiers. He says, "The boys that come over in our regiment act as though they were half-starved. When they come in, someone of our boys will run along the line and get a little food from several boys and then go to work and cook the Johnny Reb a good meal. And some stout, hardy rebels have even sat down and cried before they could take time to eat."
Mm, yeah. Thank you so
much. Very touching.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. Thank you so much for calling. We finally have some open lines again. You can join in, too. I should have given that number a little while ago. It's the 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions as comment and comments as we visit with Kevin and Patsy Alderson, who have put together the book Letters Home to Sarah, the Civil War Letters of Guy C. Taylor, who was a very prolific writer. And, you know, as I read through the book, even though we don't have Sarah's letters, the wife, because of the way Guy is responding, we get to learn a lot about her and about what life was like at the home front.
True. And in fact, when we got the letters and Kevin started reading some of the letters to me, he was very, very protective of the letters, so I don't think I was even able to touch them. Mm-hmm. So he read a lot of things to me, and as he was reading them to me, I said, Kevin, you need to write a book someday. This is really good. And it was touching, just something as simple as in one of his letters, he wrote that it was about time that she weaned Charlie. So he was very, very involved in the family of raising Charlie. He was afraid Charlie was going to get spoiled, and yet on the other hand, he wanted to make sure that Charlie had everything he needed, and Sarah also. He wasn't worried about how she spent the money. And I thought that was pretty interesting. The other thing I thought that was really interesting about the letters, probably more from a woman's point of view, is when I was in school, history wasn't my strongest suit. Kevin's made history a lot more interesting, you know, to me, and I truly, truly enjoy history a lot more than I ever did. But this is the kind of book that I think you don't really truly have to be into necessarily history. You don't have to be a history buff to enjoy this book.
No.
Because it is some very personal stuff. And one other thing is it was actually his letter of January 21st in 1865, and that was like 10 months into his letters, that he actually uses the word love.
Yes.
And then it's not even directed at her. It's at, you know, you are not forgotten from far away from, you know, from home and from the ones that he loves. But yet, even with not using that word love, you can just tell through the whole letter with starting out, my dear wife, and you know, from your husband, that there was so much love in that family and that he cared about Charlie and Sarah and truly, truly missed them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was interested, and she saved everything. I remember reading one of the letters where he talks about a cotton. And he adds some pieces of cotton or whatever, different prior seeds or what have you, and describes them. And he said, I'm enclosing them in the letter. And then I looked down in the notes to find that you have, when you opened that letter, the cotton was still in there, in the envelope.
And we still have the cotton. In fact, when we went down south, we stopped along the road because we found a big cotton bud. So I have a little cotton bud sitting in a vase at home, I guess, just kind of remind me of Guy and Sarah. He really did want Sarah to know everything that was going on. I think at the beginning he left quite a bit out. Didn't want her to worry, but as time went on, I think he shared a lot more with her.
And a sort of a rolling story was the money that was owed to him by, was it a Chapman or somebody? I forget who.
A guy by the name of George Chipman, who also happened to be his brother-in-law.
Oh, that was it, because letter there was, for a long time, there was comments about that.
Yeah, and we thought again about, well, is that something that's necessarily historically noteworthy? And that's where Patsy was a tremendous help to me, because I'm very historically minded and so on and like all of that information. But she had such a strength as far as recognizing relationship and what was going on in the family and the idea of finances and all those kind of things. And so the little bit of a struggle between he and his brother-in-law over this debt, which is probably not a very large debt, becomes really a sidelight and very entertaining when a guy's in a position where he could get killed in any battle and they're worried about this, whatever it was.
$10 or whatever it was.
A small debt at home.
Lynn in Lake Forest, Illinois, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hi there, Larry, and guest, and thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. My great-grandfather, Hiram Connery, who was from Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, was in the Civil War also, was also mustered in at Camp Randall. He was in 1864 and 1865. He kept like a little daily notebook or diary, you might say, but he went down, first of all, they went to Cairo, Illinois, and then down to Vicksburg. And he was with General Sherman's army. He writes about getting sick, dysentery, etc., being sent back to Cairo. Fortunately, the North won without him. But he then went on with rejoined the army, and they went on to Atlanta, where he writes about picket duty and how at night they were so close to the Confederate soldiers, and of course they both spoke the same language, so they could speak to each other over their campfires, and did. And he writes very plainly,
mm-hmm.
and he writes about what the land is good for growing, because he was a farmer.
Oh.
And just kind of interesting, he writes, when they're finally come back up through Virginia, I think they came up through the Wilderness Campaign, it's been a while since I've looked at it, but they... they're finally, the war is over, and they get the news, and his comment is all the boys were glad. Then a few days later, they get the news about President Lincoln's assassination, and he writes, all the boys were sad.
Mm.
And he writes a little bit about when he gets back to Sun Prairie, and he has a wife and a baby at that point before he left. Fortunately, he came back, so, you know, the rest of the family was born. He writes a little bit about working for his father-in-law and so forth, and then it ends. But we have his...
the treasure.
Yeah, it really is. It is so plain, but there's a very, what I'll call a sort of a panoramic picture of him with other veterans, both of the Civil War and the Spanish-American War, the Indian Wars, etc., that was taken in front of the Capitol in Madison in, I think, 1912.
Mm.
And I wonder if Guy Taylor was alive then and was in that picture.
Hmm.
Guy Taylor died in 1902, so he would not have been. However, I am familiar with some of the reunions you're talking about that happened there in Madison, and I know the leader, or the should say the colonel of the 36th, after a couple other colonels had been killed, was Clement Warner, who played a very important role in Madison because he was a major pusher in getting the statue at Camp Randall and the gate there.
Ah.
And so I know exactly what you're talking about as far as that kind of interest. The other point that you brought up that I really want to accentuate is, as an ex-history teacher, really I think in terms of teaching history, it's all about connection. If you can connect the youth or connect people with the past through personal experience such as you had, that's really how you get those folks interested. Now, I'm not trying to speak out against textbook companies and so forth, but I know that the greatest success that we had would be to do family histories, local histories, and so on, and then connect students with events that their families had experienced, because history is, in a sense, it's everybody's. Everybody in America shares that, and the story that you're sharing certainly collaborates some of the same things that Guy saw.
Yeah. Lynn, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Appreciate it. Janice in Whitefish Bay. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, this is very interesting to me because my cousin and I are in the process of editing letters that were written by our aunt, who has been long dead. She died when she came back from the war, but she was a nurse in World War One, and ended up right behind the lines. And I've done some research, too, as you have. I've looked up on the Internet. I found the record of the war that certain instances that happened that actually collaborate with her. I mean, she was there at that same place that they mentioned, you know, in the record. Anyway, I would urge you to donate your letters to the Wisconsin Veterans Museum in Madison, because that's what I did with my aunt's letters. I transcribed them, and then we also, my cousin has her pictures. She had a photo album. So my cousin has her pictures, and I have the letters, and we didn't know that we had I didn't know she had the pictures, and she didn't know I had the letters. So anyway, we discovered that one time. We said, oh, well, we got to put this together. Anyway, I donated those letters eventually, and the other things that were in a big box that I found that my aunt had, her uniform and mess kit and stuff like that. So those things are kept very safely at the Wisconsin Veterans Museum, and you can go there and look at them. I've done that. I've gone back and look at them. And the nice thing they do is they put that information on the Internet so you can look, you can share that with other people. You know, it isn't that you just have your letters yourself. You're sharing them with the public.
Which is another one of the places that we're certainly considering eventually as far as donation. And your idea of sharing is exactly why we wrote the book, because we wanted to get those letters out there and not just possess them ourselves. And so they're now available to anybody that wants to purchase them.
And it really is a fascinating read. I really enjoyed it. And Kevin and Patsy, I'm pretty sure you're going to be at the book festival, are you not, next week or this?
Yes, we're going to be at the Wisconsin Veteran Museum. That's where we'll be speaking at. We're set up for 2:45. I understand that that time can fluctuate a little bit.
On what day?
We are scheduled for on Saturday. Excuse me, December 10th on Saturday.
10.
I mean November. I'm sorry, November 10th. Yeah, this Saturday, November 10th at 2:45 at the Wisconsin Veterans Museum.
Oh, and that'll be a wonderful experience, I'm sure. And I really appreciate, well, first, thanks for buying, getting those letters at the auction and then going through the work and scholarship that you did to put this book into place, because it's a fascinating story. I am so glad that I've had a chance to learn about Guy Taylor and his family through your work, and I appreciate it very much, and I know our listeners will too, and I'm highly recommending your book. Thank you, Kevin.
Well,
thank you, Patsy.
Appreciate that, and our goal was that when we were done, we wanted something that we would be proud of, the University of Wisconsin Press, our publisher, would be proud of, and most importantly, that Guy and Sarah Taylor would be proud of.
Yeah.
And if we reach that goal, then we're satisfied.
You should be well satisfied. It's a wonderful book. Thank you so much. Kevin and Patsy Alderson, our guests, who live in rural Lafarge, Wisconsin, and they have published this book, Letters. Actually, it's published by the University of Wisconsin Press. Letters Home to Sarah, The Civil War Letters of Guy C. Taylor, 36 Wisconsin Volunteers, and we didn't get into, there's so much we could have gotten into with them that we weren't able to. So maybe you'll have a chance on Saturday as part of the Wisconsin Book Festival to go and visit and learn some more. Fascinating conversation about an aspect of Wisconsin history that isn't too well known. Coming up next, we'll talk about a very well-known aspect of Wisconsin's culture, cheese. Jeannie Carpenter, our old friend from Wisconsin Cheese Originals, with us today. And I hope you'll stay tuned right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.